We'll start the show in just a minute, but first, a word from our premier brand sponsor, Casago.
Casago's founder, Steve Schwab, has been quoted as saying, "You can only be a local in one place." This simple yet profound statement is the basis of Casago's franchise model, which allows locally owned vacation rental management companies the ability to compete at a national level by leveraging the systems, software, and support, the buying power of a much larger organization.
As a Casago franchisee, you have the freedom to run your business with the support of a community of like-minded professionals while leveraging the economies of scale and buying power to increase profitability and reduce operating costs.
Visit casago.com/franchise for more information.
Welcome to Alex and Annie, the real women of vacation rentals. With more than 35 years combined industry experience, Alex Huesner and Annie Holcomb have teamed up to connect the dots between inspiration and opportunity, seeking to find the one story, idea, strategy, or decision that led to their guests' big aha moment. Join them as they highlight the real stories behind the people and brands that have built vacation rentals into the $100 billion industry it is today. And now, it's time to get real and have some fun with your hosts, Alex and Annie.
Welcome to Alex and Annie, the real women of vacation rentals. I'm Alex.
And I'm Annie.
And we are here today with Justin Ford, who is the Director of Safety and Certification Programs for Breezeway. It's a mouthful there, but Justin, we are so excited to have you on the show finally.
Yeah, no, it's great to be on. I listened to all your episodes, and you guys are definitely becoming leaders in the vacation rental industry when it comes to podcasting. So I'm excited to be here.
Oh, you're very kind. And I think that one of the things that I've learned from you is that you are making safety sexy and fun again. So I think that's what we're going to talk about because it's pretty timely. There's a lot of things going on in the industry. We talk a lot about advocacy, but somehow the safety issue plays a big component of some of the advocacy and some of the regulations that are getting done or not getting done around the country. So we're excited to pick your brain and hear what you have to say about it. But before we get started, I learned a little bit about your background this morning and that I wasn't aware of. So tell us your journey from start to finish, how you got to Breezeway.
That's a great question. I think I've had a pretty unique path. I get commended, which I appreciate from time to time, that I don't look as old as I am when I start listing. But my background actually was I was in the U.S. Coast Guard and did fishery enforcement and boating safety for a number of years, which led me to a career as a captain, a yacht captain. And I managed a corporate yachting fleet for a major credit card company for 11 years. And during that time, I became a volunteer firefighter. Anyway, Bank of America bought that company. And suddenly I was going, what am I going to do? And I had a little lake cottage in Maine. This is back in 1997. And they gave me enough severance that at the same time, my neighbor said, hey, you're doing well renting your property out. How about you help me with mine? And I grew a vacation rental company into the largest vacation rental company in the Northeast called On the Water in Maine. Still does great business up there in New England. And along that journey, working as a volunteer firefighter and with my Coast Guard background, started identifying there were a lot of safety issues in rental properties. I ended up having my own. It was pretty scary. Someone was injured in a way that they're impacted for the rest of their life because of that. And I realized, wait a minute, how was I supposed to know that? And did research and went, oh my gosh, how is anybody supposed to know what to do to keep people safe in these rentals? There's no information. And so I started some checklists and that grew into a business, which I started called Dwell Safe, that was focused on making sure that rental properties were safe. And fortunately, Breezeway bought that 4 years ago. And so I joined Breezeway as the director and safety director of safety and certification programs.
See, even you hard time for you it. Too.
Yes. And so I think it's pretty neat. I've had a unique career in which I've been involved in every aspect of the industry. I've been a property manager. I've had a boat rental company. We had a real estate office. Managed as many as 600 rental properties at one time. And then I've worked for the software companies. And now I've pioneered this whole safety program that's really gone global, which is really exciting.
Wow. Very cool. And so what a varied past within the industry. You're one of the true OGs going back in the day. And yeah, I'm from New Hampshire, so a New Englander as well. And it's funny thinking back, I moved to Myrtle Beach in 2008, but I didn't know what vacations were when I lived up there. Nobody really talked about them as a product, really, I would say, or as a place to stay. I've stayed in them. I've stayed in ski condos that were owned by other people, but just never really thought of it as a business. And when I first moved down here, I thought that any of the companies, if you had properties, that the company owned all of those properties. Right. So a lot of learnings, and just, I think there's still quite pretty big differences between the Northeast and how vacation rentals are run up there versus in the Southeast where Annie and I are located. But I'll have to pick your brain more on your experience back up in Maine in those days, because I bet you have some great stories in the early days.
Yeah, the Northeast is definitely more of a repeat rental market, I think. That was one of the things that we always, like 87% of our renters were repeats. You almost didn't have to advertise. You just said, hey, here's the address to send the check.
Yeah. And there weren't places to advertise back then. There was no Vrbo or Airbnb. And then fast forward, that's what's made the barrier to entry so much easier for companies and individuals to get into this now, because they've got the platform that the OG companies didn't have. We had to make our own platform deliver great guest experience and have people come back. And if you couldn't get those repeat bookings, your business just didn't stay in business. And I think from the safety side of things, you probably saw that way ahead of any of where the industry has. If something happens in a property, that guest is definitely not going to come back.
Yeah, absolutely. The key difference for me, I saw a firefighter, I don't just get involved with all the vacation rental conferences. I'm at all these fire conferences tomorrow in Missouri, speaking to fire marshals about short-term rentals. And the fire industry has been adopting a whole philosophy now that there are no such things as accidents anymore. An accident is like a meteor flies out of the sky.
Yeah.
And hits you. That in the history of humankind, we don't know of a meteor ever just coming and hitting somebody. That would be an accident. But they're looking now at drunk driving car crashes. They're trying to steer away from accidents because they're preventable. You don't drink.
Preventable, yeah.
You don't drive. How is that an accident?
It shouldn't
begin with. And so that's something that I've been really focused on introducing to our industry, is that everything that we encounter as it's safety related, we can prevent incidents from happening in these properties. There's no reason for anybody to be hurt or killed. And that's something that you can't do with every other aspect of this industry, since you can't ever get the right mattress that's comfortable for everybody. You can't ever get the right Wi-Fi speed, and no one's ever going to be happy with the tree blocking their view. But you can actually make these properties safe, makes it especially impactful for what I get to do.
So one of the things that we've been talking about, and I recently had a good conversation with Heather Bayer on her podcast about kind of education and how we've gotten so many new people in the industry, and the education that they're being, I guess, exposed to would be the best word, is not necessarily the deep-rooted vacation rental management. It's more of the put money here and get money there and you'll be rich and you'll be able to cash out. And it's all this Vegas styles, lights and action. And it's missing some of the fundamentals. And for a property manager or anybody getting into it, you've mentioned it earlier, like, how would you know, where do you go to get this information? So if there's not a Justin, like, what is the person or the place that someone needs to go to make sure that they have the right safety information? Because I think there's a lot of confusion, because a lot of
it probably doesn't exist, right?
Well, and it seems to me like when I read some of the stuff, it's written like in the lawyer terminology to make sure that somebody's covered more than explaining exactly what something needs to be. So how do you cut through all that noise and confusion, and where does somebody go to get that?
So I call it the witch's brew. You've got
you have a name for it. Okay.
Right. Yeah. Right now, if you didn't know I existed, which I'm not so grandiose to say that's a key piece, but frankly, Breezeway and my program are the only one out there in the whole world doing this.
Yeah.
Outside of that, if you just came in right now and said, you know what, I want to make sure my house is safe, you've got to read international residential code books, international building code books. You got to go through NFPA and read all the NFPA books. And then break out what the definitions are. What type of property am I running? If it's a single family home, okay, then IRC, International Residential Code. So you got to then go through hundreds of pages of code to go, oh, wait a minute. I have bedrooms that are more than 20 feet above ground. That means I need to have an escape ladder. Okay, because there's no guide for that. So it's really, again, like a witch's brew. It's hunting through the woods and finding little sticks and little bug tails. It's all these
things
that you've got to find and mix in together to finally go, I think I have everything in order. But then beyond that, you have all the stuff that code doesn't even cover. Code doesn't go into pool safety. Code doesn't go into bunk bed safety or chemicals under the sink. That's where I've had to get deeply involved with the insurance companies, and proper insurance has always been awesome about this, revealing, all right, what type of claims have we had? We've had all these kids that have gotten poisoned by chemicals under the sink, and that doesn't show up in the media, but we know those claims are coming in. So that's been what I've mixed all together to do that. But yeah, it's real hard if you didn't. If I wasn't putting this together, I hope somebody else would be, because there's really no way to compile all this easily.
It reminds me of a few years ago, before advocacy and all the legislative issues started happening, that some people were talking about this at conferences, just like some people are talking about safety at conferences, but it was in its infancy, that it was on the brink of, it's almost going to be an issue. And the people that started listening early and started to understand what could potentially be coming down the line, those are the ones that were able to really shape the future. And we've gone through a lot on that side of things. But I think this kind of reminds me of just the mentality and the attitude for it. And that there's a lot of people, when they go to conferences, probably myself included, that, I mean, the safety programs aren't the ones that I'm most interested in, nor were the advocacy ones a few years ago. But now we're very active in advocacy, and you have to do it, right? And somebody has to lead the charge. So we're very grateful that for the industry that you're the one that is stepping up to do that. And of course, that Breezeway is supporting that as well. That says a lot about the organization that you're with and your experience.
It's a great point you make there. And I don't think you were directly making it, but between the lines, safety sounds boring. Fire extinguishers, smoke alarms.
Yep.
I've had to learn along the way that it hasn't been an easy road. I feel, to be honest, I've been doing it. This is my 10-year anniversary of doing safety and working with safety and sharing that. 10 years I've been going to VRMA conferences and talking about safety. It used to be two or three people showed up, and do we really have Justin do a presentation next year? Now I can fill the room, and that's great. But it used to be difficult to do that. And unfortunately, learning the hard way, I did a lot of scare. A lot of, if you don't do this, people will die, and told a lot of the scary stories. And I think that was off-putting to some people. They don't want to be scared out of doing what they do for work. They know it's there. There's a cliff over there. Leave it over there. I don't want to walk over there. Justin, you're going to walk me to that cliff, and I don't need to do that.
Right.
It's great what you're doing. And I've learned to transition that message. It's hard now because sometimes I'm getting introduced and people are like, oh, Justin, tell us a real scary story. I'm like, I don't really do that. I'm trying not to walk to the cliff anymore. But the reality is, the unfortunate part is I don't have to walk people a cliff anymore, because the cliff, it's in their face constantly. With all the incidents that are happening. So trying to twist this into a positive message has been an evolution that I have had over the past few years into, as Annie said, trying to make it sexy. I think we're getting there.
It's interesting. So having been in property management as well, most of what I worked with was condos. And so some of them were built in the 80s and some of them were built in the most recent revolution in the 2000s. And the variables between what the safety mechanisms were actually built in the buildings versus what had to be retrofitted. But I'm curious, having been on the condo side of it, and especially with the newer condos, that stuff was built. That was just part of the way the building was built. You had the fire suppression. You had all the bells and whistles and literal alarms everywhere. And the fire department came out to those buildings in the off season every single year. And I know in Panama City Beach a few years back that there was a new fire chief that came in, and all of a sudden he came in and said, wait a minute, everybody's way over the occupancy that they're allowed for these buildings. But of course, people bought with the understanding that they were going to be able to house 6, 8, 12 people in a unit. And the fire chief was like, that's not going to happen. So that was a really big ordeal and a friction point within the market with developers and owners and all of that. But what I learned from that was like, if you get the people that are the ones that are going to have to do the rescuing, the ones that are going to have to be part of that safety that's in the background, if you get them involved in the conversation from the very beginning, like people have a really good understanding of what's going on. But I think that people that go in and they manage after the fact, they manage after a building's been built or after a house is built, they don't know to call the local fire chief and say, hey, could you come look at this? And that is, as I understand it, at least from Panama City Beach, that's something that anybody can do in their market, right? They can ask the fire chief to come out or someone from the fire department.
Absolutely. There's two things there to touch on what you just spoke of. Fire marshals are great. In fact, I've been doing joint presentations with a fire marshal from Florida, and I've done them in Texas. They're very supportive. I've yet to meet a fire marshal or a fire chief who goes, oh, vacation rentals, I hate them. They don't feel that way. They mostly, they need shiny big red trucks in their district. They need that money, and they understand that tourism dollars support their ability to have good equipment and operate in a way that they can be effective. So they're great. You should be interacting with them. And I think that's really important. I've advised people that before. You should know your fire chief. You should be having dinner with them once a year, inviting them over to the office, walking through some properties. But going back to what you're talking about with the condos in the 70s and 80s, right now, the vacation rental industry is going through the same thing that the hotel industry did in the early 1980s. There was all these accidents. We were all just out in Kansas City at the VRMA conference this past spring. I don't know that many people realize that's a rebuilt hotel on top of the deadliest hotel accident in America, where the hotel collapsed in the 1980s.
Really?
I'm glad I know that now.
There was all these fires and deaths happening in hotels, and Congress said, all right, this is getting out of hand. We've got to stop this. What are we going to do? And that led to, signed by the first President Bush, the Federal Hotel Motel Safety Act of 1990.
Okay.
And that was put in place to stop and prevent this. That law also did something that nobody ever would have dreamed of. And that put a huge damper on the vacation rental industry. Most people don't realize that you can't rent your vacation rentals to government workers, government employees, because of that act. And so we lose out on $4 billion a year. I don't know about you, but I'd much rather rent to 4 DOT workers that are in town to inspect the highway for a week than to 4 partiers that are here to drink.
Yeah.
You don't get that business because of that act. And so now we're seeing a whole rerun. Now we're seeing, okay, now there's this explosive growth in the vacation rental industry, and there's all kinds of safety incidents happening. People are dying. People are getting injured. So we're heading down a path that's going to be restrictive. And the key that I'm trying to put everyone into, the position I'm trying to put everyone into, is to be prepared for that. If we're already there, if you're already doing everything that they're going to tell you you're going to have to do soon, you're going to be ahead of the game.
So I know during the hurricane, we've housed workers that are sent in to help with the construction and rebuild and stuff. But is that different than what you just talked about, that you can't rent to them? They have to stay at hotels?
That's correct. You can't use your government credit card as a Pentagon, Army, DOT. You can't expense that.
That's more like what Anthony Gant is working on then too, right? Like his is more, I guess, same thing military-wise, but that they can't use that money towards that type of accommodation. But that's interesting. I hadn't thought about it that way, but.
Yeah, so and it is interesting because I know like after Hurricane Katrina, the company that I worked for, we got with FEMA and we had our properties certified. And so once you get that certification, right, it unlocks that, to your point. But we had to have every single one of them inspected. They had to come in and check for fire extinguishers and all the stuff that is required to meet those standards. And there were buildings that would like, they just were like, no, sorry, we can't even. But it was great to be able to go back to owners and say, hey, if you bring these standards up, we had something, a document to be able to show them. So I think it's helpful, but more people should take advantage of those inspections. I think it's, again, to the fire chief, the fire marshal, like having a set of eyes that's expert and is going to look for those things like Anthony talked about when we interviewed him about like wires, like just exposed wires and wire, like trip hazards and things that you just don't think about because they're just there and they just become part of like just the way you view a unit or a condo or a home or whatever. You don't think about that's somebody could trip on that and fall down the stairs and break their neck, or they're thinking worst case scenario, unfortunately, but you don't think about it when you're in the day to day.
Anthony was actually one of the first people to go through our short-term rental safety inspection program.
Okay.
I know that wire knowledge he shared with you, I kind of know where it came from.
Oh.
I love that.
We'll have to talk to him about it. We thought it was all his idea.
Yeah, no, but Anthony, that was part of his program was to do that. And that's $4.6 billion a year that's going into the hotel industry that's not new to ours.
That could, right. Yeah. Now, do you foresee there being an act or a bill that's going to do the same thing for vacation rentals? Because I don't feel like, and I know Anthony's working on some things on that realm, but is that something that you see as a possibility?
No, something different's going to happen. Unfortunately, the VRMA and the advocacy board and are looking closely at this. It almost happened 2 years ago. It's going to happen again, and it's going to happen overnight. And we're even seeing it happening at local levels. What's happening is each state adopts a version of the building code. Vermont and Florida have adopted NFPA, but Colorado, Maine, Washington, they all adopt and say, hey, we're going to adopt the 2018 version of International Building Code. And they make some adjustments or whatever, but that's what their state legislatures do every year. And so International Building Code and NFPA, National Fire Protection Association, very similar, are both looking at defining what a short-term rental is. And so once they define what a short-term rental is, a few fire chiefs from around the world sitting in a back room are going to make this decision and come up with it, vote on it, and go, this is what a short-term rental is. They insert that into code. Now, all of a sudden, state of Florida, state of South Carolina votes and goes, yeah, we're going to adopt this code. And suddenly people are going to wake up one day and go, wait a minute, our state has now endorsed that a short-term rental is this and now must do all this. And so that's, I believe, how it's going to happen. It's really not even going to be 5 years. It's going to happen in the next couple, if not this year. They're looking at it again this year. So when that happens, it's going to change everything for everybody overnight. And I'm trying to help prepare you for that.
Wow. So what do you think that's going to look like? Because again, that's pretty scary, but I think that's just unfortunately how a lot of legislation gets done is in a back room behind closed doors and people just have little breadcrumbs of knowledge until it comes out. But I would imagine if it's something that's a global definition, that's going to be pretty impactful. Looking at Europe, a lot of the places in Europe are very old and historic. And if all of a sudden they say a short-term rental has to have these fire systems in place and you can't go in and retrofit a 500-year-old building to do something like that easily. It would be very costly. So what do you think it will look like? Do you have any sense of it?
Yeah. In the short, we're already seeing it. TaylorMade ran into this in Maryland 2 years ago when a fire marshal in Maryland decided to say that every short-term rental, by his definition of the codes, is supposed to have a sprinkler system. So we're already seeing how that's starting to evolve in Maryland. We saw at a local level in Scottsdale, Arizona, where they voted in some safety requirements basically overnight. Nothing that was too prohibitive, but it suddenly changed the game for a lot of people there. Europe's good. Europe has far less accidents than we do, or incidents, excuse me. They have a much better focus on safety. I was just over in the UK. Police and traffic workers, and they wear these full body reflective suits. We don't do that in the US. They have a much better focus. But to answer your question specifically, the first impact we're going to see is egress, and it's going to change occupancy. And I think that's the big one that people need to be prepared for. That loft that you've got in an A-frame that's this cool, cozy thing that's all over Instagram as well in Colorado, guess what? Yeah. It's done. So that's going to be probably the biggest, most dramatic changes in occupancy. And you're not going to take a four-bedroom house and market it for 16 people anymore because there are going to be big occupancy restrictions. I think fire-wise, you're going to be able to work with smoke alarms. Sprinkler systems are actually becoming very inexpensive to add. In fact, if I'm looking at doing it in my own home, I have a home built in the 1950s, it's going to cost me $8,000 to add a sprinkler system to my three-bedroom home. So it's getting very inexpensive to do that. Yeah. So it's not going to be a killer. But yeah. Occupancy, I think, is where it's going to start. And people who plan on having 16 people in their house and they're making $10,000, $12,000 a rental are going to suddenly see that, nope, you're only allowed to have 8 people because it's 4 bedrooms. And suddenly they're going to have to cut their rates back as well.
Yeah, that's come up a lot in the panhandle with some of the homes along 38. Simply from parking, because there's just
been, I was gonna say parking. Same
no, there's here. Been no parking, but I know there's been a couple of incidences around the country that I can think of, and I don't remember exactly where they were, but it were house parties happen, and people stand out on balconies or they stand out on decks that were built on top of like porticos or porticoches of a larger home. They weren't built for people to be out there jumping around and partying on, and they collapse, and 10, 12 people get hurt, and again. Nobody meant anything by it. Nobody meant for it to happen. And it was just all part of doing business. But those are the kind of things that there's always one bad incident that ruins it for the rest of the community. But I think that the occupancy situation on some levels, that it's going to be a hard pill to swallow. But it, at the end of the day, if you think of I look at some of the buildings in our market now, if you have some of them in Myrtle Beach too, you're talking 700 plus condos.
Yeah.
If they're maxed out in occupancy. You've got 3,500, 4,000 people in a building on 20 some floors. And if the fire department's trying to get to that, it's impossible. There's no way the fire department of Panama City Beach alone could go to that building and be able to get everybody out in a timely manner. It's just, the thought of it to me has always been a little overwhelming. So I think occupancy, while it's going to be a pain point, it's the right thing to do.
It is. It's frustrating. I was just down in West Manatee County, this Anna Maria, Bradenton, that market, great fire marshal down there, really wants to focus on doing things to improve safety. And it's exciting to see that positive approach in government. But his frustration point, and I get it, is that these houses come before the planning board to be built as a single family home. And then the second that the plumbing inspector and the code inspector go in and approve it for occupancy, there's a rental sign put up. And I didn't get to interject and say some of the safety things that I thought would be important while you're building this property, because it was being built as a single family home. Now, suddenly that's a house that's running to 16 people. I could have offered some different things that I think would have helped improve safety there that wouldn't have cost much. And when you sit there and go, oh, some of these things would be expensive, a sprinkler system for $8,000 in new construction, or that 16-person hot tub that's $20,000. So don't tell me you didn't have the money to spend a little bit on safety.
Yeah. How do you see this being enforced? Because I feel that's going to be a very difficult thing too, and will lead to some people just thinking, do I really have to do it? Because that's a whole workforce to be able to go out and check units to make sure that they're up to code.
So there's two parts to that. And that's our business foundation for the safety program at Breezeway. My idea way back in 2013 is it's too difficult to enforce this. There's over 2 million vacation rentals. How do we do it? So the idea was, if we have an initial inspection done by a fire official, then subsequent years it can be done through the app. And so we've been doing that now at Breezeway for 3 years. We've done tens of thousands of these inspections where a homeowner takes the Breezeway app and they walk through their property and they document, they geotag the photos. Here's my fire extinguisher. Here are my smoke alarms. It's all documented, goes into a report, and that is satisfactory for the local government. And some of these governments do agree with that and approve of that. So that's our hope as we continue to move forward, is that more governments are willing to approve these remote self-inspections. And that's part of the Breezeway Safety Program with our short-term rental safety inspector course, which the VRMA has endorsed, is if you get certified as a Breezeway short-term rental safety inspector, you do this inspection, you create the report, now you can get a discount on your insurance as well. And so we're seeing a huge growth in that right now. So that's going to be the balance between government and the private sector saying, we're going to help inspect these as well.
Yeah, interesting.
I wanted to ask on the insurance, because we talked about that a little bit and what's happening in the industry with all the Florida, California, the two biggest ones right now, but it's getting to South Carolina, it's getting to a lot of the coastal areas. Insurance companies are leaving the state. One thing that I know I love about working at Homes and Villas is that we take safety very serious. It's a very big part of our conversation we have with property managers. And it's interesting to encounter people that don't have the right level of insurance, or they just don't know. It's not that they are trying to be nefarious. It's just they don't know what they need. But with insurance getting harder, I would think that, and correct me if I'm wrong, but if people had the right safety measures in place, they could get discounts on some of the insurance that they do have to have, right?
Yeah. So insurance isn't just leaving states. It's leaving our industry. I don't know if people understand that. I mentioned I've been in this industry a long time. In 2006, a homeowner would come in and list a property with me as a property manager and say, what about insurance? I'd give them a list that had 40 different companies on it and say, you can call Holyoke, you can call Middle Oaks, you can call Allstate. Mm-hmm. You could just list all these insurance companies. That doesn't exist anymore. There's very few insurance companies, and even then they won't write in all areas. Proper insurance will tell you they're done writing in Florida for this year. Lloyd's of London let them insure a certain number of homes. Colorado, California, they weren't even allowed to insure in Maui before the fires because it's still considered an active volcano. So there are so many areas. Insurance is really a big thing that we've got to pay close attention to, because it's going to be very soon that we can't have that. And even people who think they're insured aren't. You see it all the
fully time. Insured.
So many people still don't know what off-premise liability is. And if you're in this vacation rental industry and you don't know what off-premise liability is, you've got a big problem. Find out what that is.
What is it?
What is it?
It's insuring for the things that happen that are way beyond your control. Your renter brings a dog on the property and that dog bites a neighbor. Covered under traditional insurances. But now all of a sudden the neighbor's going, hey, you're renting your house out and that dog from that renter came over and bit me. I'm suing you for doing that. If you don't have off-premise liability, also liquor. So many of these hosts and managers are giving wine and beer and leaving it on the counter. Guess what? You only have to give them one drop of alcohol to have then given them alcohol. Now they drug the rental.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
Yeah. I hadn't thought about that.
Lights that you provided off the property, boats that you provided. If you don't have those coverages, which almost no insurance carrier provides, you're in big trouble. So you got to, there's so many I's to dot and T's to cross now, and you've got to do your research.
So on that, because I'm always confused about this. So is it the responsibility of the homeowner to have insurance as well? I say they, I know they would have insurance, but what is the property manager, like the management company, what should they expect? Because they have to have some sort of umbrella for all of their properties, right? And then how far down do they drill into an individual home that their coverage needs to go into?
Yeah, there's an incident that I'm aware of. I'm not going to say where it is in the country, but there's an incident that I think highlights this, where a property manager said that we will oversee the alarm systems in all the rental homes that we manage. And unfortunately, a fire happened and there was a camera that caught that fire. It happened at 2 or 3 in the morning. Well, obviously, nobody at the rental agency is awake at 2 or 3 in the morning looking at a camera to see a fire start and the house burned down. The natural progression of things is this rental property is the assumption is that the rental property owner's insurance is going to cover this. But that's not what happened. They went, whoa, this property management company has got a lot of insurance. We're going to go to them to pay for this house. We're not going to rebuild it. The insurance company for the property manager is going, we weren't covering you to be an alarm monitoring company. What?
Way outside of your sphere of influence.
We're not paying then. So the lawsuit has been circling on this for years. That's a great example to highlight. There's so many aspects of what we're doing if you're a property manager when it comes to insurance. You have got to make sure you're insured to do everything you can possibly do. Because when they come after the homeowner first because the deck collapsed. By the way, we've had over 400 people injured in deck collapses at vacation rentals this summer. Just had 25 people in Washington State.
Oh, my gosh.
Almost half the decks in America need to be replaced. And unfortunately, a lot of them are rentals. But when they come after that, 25 people aren't getting much from $1 million policy from a deck collapse.
Yeah.
So they go next. Now they're coming after the property manager. And the property manager who says, I didn't know anything about it. You're done. You need to know everything about it. You need to know everything about the deck at your rental property. You need to know it holds 50 pounds per square foot. And you need to have a sign posted that said no more than 16 people on this deck. And you need to know that there's been an inspection in the last 5 years. We're in a serious business now.
I'm sure. Yeah. And I'm sure it probably bubbles back up too. So if they go after the owner, the property management company, the wherever it is that they booked, if they booked on an OTA, I'm sure people are going up that ladder as well. And anybody who's involved in this process is at risk at this point.
Yeah, the OTAs, I work very closely with the trust and safety team at some of the big ones. And I will tell you, behind the scenes, they are battling tons of lawsuits.
I bet.
Everyone's coming at them, and every lawyer is trying to find that win. They're looking for that.
The deep pocket.
When they're looking for the way to finally
position it.
Accountable. And I don't, the OTAs certainly have some accountability because they've got the checkbox, but ultimately they're not there. They're a modern New York Times. But there's one here in Maine where three people died in 2016, and that's still an ongoing lawsuit because the checkbox on the OTA site said it had smoke alarms, but it didn't.
Oh, it didn't.
So, who's responsible for that? And so that years of lawsuits that are going on. And at some point in time, there's going to be some definitive answer from some court somewhere that says, okay, we do think the OTAs have some liability, but there's a lot of wrangling going on.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
So what would you say, and what are you seeing the most? What are the things that you're seeing? I see a lot of decks collapse, like you mentioned, house fires, but would you say those are the two most things, or are there other?
No, those get the most coverage as we're talking. There was a fire 2 days ago that killed three renters in North Carolina and the Outer Banks.
Yeah.
Those make the big headlines, but the reality is about 83, and this comes from the insurance industry, 83% of all the claims they get are for slips, trips, and falls. It's those. A good friend of mine in the industry who manages vacation rentals called me last week and said, hey, we just had a guest call for a slip, trip, and fall. They got home, they got injured, they're filing for a $250,000 claim. What do we do? I see those the most. And when I talk to vacation rental agencies around the country, I'd say about a third right now, based on my informal survey, are going through some sort of litigation related to a slip, trip, and fall type of incident. Poor lighting, crack in the sidewalk, lights out, that type of carpet that shouldn't have been where it should be. So those are the ones that are most likely to get people into trouble. And it's hard because we don't want people that die with the fire stuff. But reality is, you need to take a look around your rentals and go, does that carpet make sense there? And is that light bright enough? When's the last time I visited my rental at 9 o'clock at night,
just
knew what it looked like.
Gosh, it's just so much to think about. And again, I was talking to somebody this morning, and we're talking about standards and across the industry and like how that's hard. It's very hard to do it because you have to think like a homeowner, like living in your home, like what are the things, and you have to do that in every single home. And it's different, again, to lighting, to stairs, to, you know, porches, decks, whatever. There's just so many things that are at play that I think it goes back to the very beginning of when you start in this business, people just have to know where to go to get this information. So clearly they can go to Justin, they can go to Breezeway. Verma does do some stuff, but I think one of the things that we really need to push for is to be able to have Justin and the conversation be more central at these conferences, to be on center stage, not be a side session that's in a room two floors down from the main theater. Like, it needs to be something that people have to be part of and understand what they're getting into. Cause I think it goes back to what you were saying about the regulation, or like what, when and if it gets defined, vacation rentals gets defined, it'll probably clean up 60% of the inventory that's out there. But wiping 60% of the inventory off the map because of a definition, that's going to be bad to the economy of any given state, of any given municipality, put businesses out of place. So I think just wrapping up here, Justin, what you're doing is such important work, and it needs to have more light shown on it. And while we focus on advocacy, I think that advocacy and safety have to be together. They have to
be together.
A conversation that has to be shared. So I hope that by coming on with Alex and I, we can help get more word out there, shed more light on what you're trying to do, and really get you more, I guess, in everybody's conversation. Everybody should know who you are. And so any way that we can do that, and I think we should. But in the meantime, what is the best way if somebody wants to reach out and get some of this information? How can they get in touch with you?
So hopefully, especially all of your listeners are members of either the VRMA FAVOR, which is the Florida Association of Vacation Rental Professionals, or NWVRP, Northwest Vacation Rental Professionals. If you're not a member, I mean, that covers the country. If you're not a member of one of those, you should be. But if you are, you get free access to the Breezeway Short-Term Rental Safety Inspector course. All of those organizations, as well as Astro, have endorsed it. And we're now getting endorsed as well by ARPO down in Latin America. All of the Latin American countries now are bringing on the safety program as well, which is exciting. I even got a call yesterday from Australia and New Zealand. They want to add it on. So it's real easy to get access to the course for free. You just have to go to the Breezeway website. Now, if you're not in any of those categories and don't want to be, the course is $350, still minor cost to go through. It takes 4 to 6 hours online. And the intent is that you are now an expert in safety and understand everything from the fundamentals that you should to make sure these rental properties are safe.
Yeah, absolutely. I know you came on our Friday Orange call for Costco a few weeks ago and did about a 45-minute presentation on a lot of these topics. You could just tell everybody was writing notes the entire time. So I think there's going to be a lot of companies that are going to hear this and hopefully individuals that will think about it in a different light. And especially this time of year, this is the time of year that as you're planning for the new year, start working on these programs, get this implemented for 2024, that you're starting out on a fresh start and on a safer note and just a good way to begin the new year.
One quick thing that I'd appreciate the opportunity to share is my boss, Jeremy Gall, the founder of Breezeway. He had the insight to know early on that safety was going to be a key part of professionalism in this industry. And he brought me on, he bought my company, and he has pushed forth anything that he can to help professionalize this industry through safety. And I think in many ways, obviously Breezeway is a for-profit company and we're trying to grow our software business. And I'm a key part of that. It's also something that Breezeway is proud to give back is through the memberships of all the organizations offering this course. He definitely deserves a lot of recognition as well for making this something important for our industry.
Yeah, absolutely. Jeremy is definitely one of the OGs, just like you as well on the technology side. And yeah, I think it's great what you guys are doing. It's benefiting the industry as a whole, not just your business and just the areas where you live and have properties, but all over. So we're very grateful for you and for Breezeway and Jeremy and the whole team there. But until next time, Justin, we will see you at VRMA for sure in Orlando. And probably, are you going to the FAVOR event also?
I'm coming to a conference near you, Streamline.
Yeah. Streamline. Okay, great.
Thanks for visiting. Big live event. So I'll be, I'm hitting the road very soon for the fall.
And you're very easy to spot because I think, how tall are you? Like 6'5", 6'6"?
I like to tell people 5'17".
I love that. There's always the tallest one in the room. I know that. So thank you so much again, Justin. We appreciate you. And until next time, thanks, everybody.